Welcome to Are You Quizzing Me? I'm Vineet Nair with my co-host Aditya Kashyap. This is a quizzing trivia podcast show. Join us as we dive deep into history, science, sport, pop culture, and so much more. Let's get quizzing.
And we're back for episode number 43, a prime episode today of Are You Quizzing Me? Prime because 43 is a prime number. Ha ha ha. You're back with Vineet and Aditya, your favorite quizzing podcast show hosts. And let's start off today's episode with the answer to Aditya's question.
So last week, the question I asked was, which song would be considered as iconic a song as Thriller was in the United States of America, which basically cemented Michael Jackson's status as the king of pop? And I realized that the answer was staring me right in the face in multiple levels, actually.
Uh-oh.
Do you, Vineet, remember DJ Doll remixes?
Vaguely.
DJ Doll remixes were these bunch of remixes of, I believe, 60s, 70s music. And they were being basically remixed for the modern pop consumer, and this was in the early 2000s. And one of the most iconic songs that was remixed was Kanta Laga.
Does that ring a bell? That does ring a bell, yes.
So the Kanta Laga video featured this actress called Shefali Jariwala, who everybody just referred to as the Kanta Laga girl, because she had a very iconic presence in it. And here's why I think it mirrors Thriller very well, is because I remember reading rumors, or at least hearing these rumors, that she had died soon after that video. And the rumor was basically because she got skin cancer, which is, I don't know, which is very, very like dark and morbid. And the reason that she got skin cancer was because at some point she gets this temporary tattoo on her skin. And I, now that I look back, I feel like my mom must have told me that just to discourage me from ever getting tattoos. I was for the longest time convinced that Shefali Jariwala, also called the Kanta Laga girl, is dead because she got a tattoo. So perhaps the reason that I'm still tattoo-less in life is because as a child I was traumatized into thinking that that will absolutely definitely give me a skin cancer bout. So
that question took me from ghosts and horror music videos to children being traumatized by tattoos. I don't think any one of your answers has taken such a great left field twist. There was like a twist in the answer.
It all adds up though, because it is the ghost of my past, Vineet. It is the horror that I have lived through.
So if you're ever visited by three ghosts during Christmas, you're saying that the ghost of your Christmas past will be Shefali Jariwala in a white sari?
Except Shefali Jariwala is very much alive, so I don't even know why.
Okay. There you have it, folks. This is Aditya using this podcast to exercise his childhood ghosts. Now, if you guys thought that I had forgotten about the audience question, I had not. So this is the audience question for this week, the answer of which I will reveal at the end of the episode. Inspired from the Kannada blockbuster movie Ratha Saptami from 1986, which in turn was based on a Kannada novel of the same name, this movie went on to earn 800 million at the box office. It also temporarily held the record for most awards won by a feature film. Which movie are we talking about? We'll reveal the answer at the end of the episode, by which time you can guess. Please don't Google. You can guess, try to guess what the answer may be. Aditya, shall I start off the proceedings for this week with our regular programming, frankly?
Go for it.
Okay, so Wayne Anthony Alwyn was an American voice actor, sound effects editor, and Foley artist. He is most famous for voicing this character, X, for 32 years. He married the actress Russie Taylor in 1991, who was famous for voicing Y, the character Y, since 1986. And they remained married until he passed away in 2009. before I give you any other further clues, let's see if you can work it out who this person is and which characters X and Y are. So we have Wayne Anthony Alvin, who voiced X for 32 years, and he married voice actress Russi Taylor in 1991, who's famous for voicing Y.
Is this Mickey and Minnie?
Oh! Class answer. Class answer. Really, that is it. It's a cracking crack, frankly speaking. Yes, this is Mickey and Minnie. My clue was going to be that Y was named after the Roman goddess of wisdom, because Minnie Minerva. But nice. You didn't require any of that. Beautiful. So yes, Wayne Anthony Alvin is the person who's voiced Mickey Mouse for the longest time. Do you know who voiced Mickey Mouse for the very first time?
I would be hard-pressed to know that.
That was Walt Disney himself, yes. So he voiced Mickey Mouse for the first time. And yeah, Wayne Anthony Alvin, the guy who voiced Mickey Mouse, was actually married to the lady who was voicing Minnie Mouse. So I found that quite symmetrical.
That's a very wholesome fact. That's a wholesome piece of trivia. I like it. Since we were talking about something as iconic as Mickey Mouse, let me do a pivot to another very iconic pop culture artifact.
Okay.
And here you have to tell me which movie I'm talking about. So in the 60s, there was a movie that came out which accidentally entered the public domain immediately. Now, why this happened was because the director inadvertently removed the copyright notice, and this was mandatory for any film to be protected by the US copyright law. So while editing the film, there was a huge blunder and the director accidentally removed the copyright notice that appears in the beginning of the film.
Wow.
And by the time this change was discovered, it was too late to reverse, which meant that as soon as this movie came out, it was in the public domain. This movie incidentally became a classic and enjoyed massive distribution and a fantastic box office run. Today, this movie is remembered for a very specific origin of a certain type of movie. So a certain genre of film originated with this particular movie. It is also iconic because it has been used in so many places, probably because of the lack of copyright. So a lot of TV stations used it. A lot of other filmmakers used it when they needed something to be played on the background in a TV in their own film. And thus, this movie has just ended up having a life of its own. Which movie am I talking about?
Is this the movie from which the Wilhelm scream was taken from? Like people sampled the Wilhelm scream?
The Wilhelm scream is much older, if I'm not wrong. I don't think it's from the 60s.
From the 60s, okay.
I believe it's from the 30s.
Okay.
This is a movie from the 60s.
So is it The Graduate?
No. And it gave rise to a specific genre of film.
Wait, is it like a blaxploitation film?
No.
Specific genre of film which would have been possible in the 60s and the 70s. Okay, I'll need a clue. You'll have to give me some kind of clue because I am completely clueless over here.
Let me give you a very straightforward clue. This is a movie from the 1968 and the director's name is George.
Wait, this is George Romero. This is a zombie movie, Night of the Living Dead.
It is Night of the Living Dead.
Are you kidding me? It didn't have a copyright notice.
Night of the Living Dead did not have a copyright notice.
Oh my God.
So this came up while I was just going through some of the questions from previous episode and I realized that this is a beautiful question and I could not let it pass, even though Halloween special was the previous episode. I have to include it here.
That is just bonkers. So they must have had like a huge financial loss, right? Because this copyright would have allowed them to license their images and other things. They could have made a lot of money from it.
I am not sure as to whether they recuperated the cost or they made a profit, if they actually were in a loss. I have no idea. I'll have to do some research on that. I'll probably include that in the fact check. But this is something that did affect their revenue for sure. Wow. Having said that, it was a classic. It was immediately well-received and a box office hit. So it might still have recovered its cost. I'm not quite sure. And it also has survived the test of time. Night of the Living Dead is considered iconic in the genre of horror films. And the type of movie that it originated, as you rightly said, was the zombie film. Because the modern rendition of what a zombie is, the first iteration of that in a film was in Night of the Living Dead. I believe last episode we discussed literature, and that was the book I Am Legend, in which the modern zombie appeared. But in a film format, it was Night of the Living Dead that this modern zombie came.
Oh, nice. Very nice. I'll stick with pop culture in a slightly different fashion. Have you heard of Lizanne Parrish Crooks?
I have not.
Okay. So Lizanne Parrish Crooks attended the Baltimore School for the Arts, where he studied acting, poetry, jazz, and ballet. He performed in Shakespeare's plays as the Mouse King role and the Mouse King role in the Nutcracker Ballet. According to a 2014 Rolling Stone article, Lizanne reportedly auditioned to play Jedi Master Mace Windu in the 1999 movie Star Wars I, The Episode Phantom Menace, a role that subsequently went to Samuel Jackson. You may not have heard of Lizanne Parrish Crooks because his mother renamed him when he was just a year old. Who am I talking about? How do we better know Lizanne Parrish Crooks?
So an actor who was active during the 90s and the 2000s? Do I have that right?
So he attended the Baltimore School of Acts in the early 90s, late 80s and early 90s, where he studied acting, poetry, jazz and ballet. Okay. And auditioned to play Jedi Master Mace Windu in the 1999 movie Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace.
No, I actually do not know. I don't have any clue.
Okay, my first clue would be that this is not an actor. Even though he may have studied acting, poetry, jazz, music and ballet, he is known for a different kind of performing art.
Is it a singer?
Yes.
What genre of music?
Hip-hop.
Hip-hop from the 90s? Is it anybody from the NWA?
No.
But you said not an actor, so I'm guessing it's not Will Smith also.
Nope.
Ooh.
I'll give you one more clue. Last clue, yes, for this please. Question. Is that, as I mentioned, you may not have heard of Lizanne Parrish Crooks because his mother renamed him when he was just a year old. She renamed him after a descendant of the last Incan ruler. The Incas. So she named him after a descendant of the last Incan ruler.
Okay, since you said hip-hop, I think it is not too far a stretch to just ask, is he black? Is the black man that we're talking about?
Yeah, it is an African-American, yes.
Okay, an African-American man.
Or I think more correctly, politically correctly, it would be said to, he's a person of color.
Person of color. Okay, it's going to make a wild guess. Is it by any chance Tupac?
It is Tupac Shakur.
Okay, well, that was a wild guess, but cool. I didn't know
that. Yeah, so Tupac Shakur was born Lizanne Parrish Crooks. He studied acting, poetry, jazz, and ballet at the Baltimore School of Arts, where he was known to perform in Shakespeare's play and played the Mouse King in the Nutcracker Ballet. Wow, his mother had renamed him when he was 1 year old to Tupac Shakur from Tupac Amaru, who was the last of the indigenous rulers of the Inca.
Very cool, according
to a 2014 Rolling Stones article, before his death, while the movie was still in its initial phases, apparently he had auditioned to play the role of Mace Windu, which I think would have been a very different interpretation if Tupac had played it compared to what Samuel Jackson did. No purple lightsaber for one.
Probably. But also, I would have loved to see Mace Windu drop some bars. Just...
rap
at the final battle. That would have been kind of cool.
So that's Lizanne Parrish Crooks, aka Tupac Shakur.
Very cool.
I was tempted when you said it's not Will Smith. I'm like, it's not Will Smith, but Will Smith is kind of connected.
Oh my god, that has flooded social media to an unnecessary extent. I don't know why I know so much about Jada Pinkett Smith. Like, I would be very happy not knowing all these
things. I concur completely. We know way too much about these people. They should really keep their private lives private.
Yeah. And Tupac was your soulmate. I mean, great. But, like, honestly, who asked these people as to who her soulmate was? God, nobody has expressed interest. Oh, well, I guess that's what happens when you're exposed to media for so long. Just start craving attention. Eventually, you make a podcast. It's a dark, dark path. I would warn Jada Pinkett Smith, it is a dark path that she's setting herself down on.
I think it's a little presumptuous of us warning Jada Pinkett Smith, considering that, you know, we are two nobodies who decided to make a podcast. And if nothing else, she's had a very successful acting career.
She has. But has she ever met somebody at a random quiz event who has heard of her and has heard her podcast? I don't know.
No.
Maybe she has.
Okay, for those who don't know what he is talking about, Aditya is still on a high because he met somebody at a quiz event who told him, "Oh, I know you. You're the guy who runs the podcast." So, yeah, and he listens to our podcast, and this is somebody we don't know. So, this is the first kind of listener interaction that Aditya has had, and he's still on the high for that. And I wouldn't fault him. I would be pretty chuffed myself.
It was a minor celebrity moment. But I also meant the dark path in the sense of you, for one time you decide to make a bad pun as a joke, and then you're just caught up in every single episode having to come up with a pun, scrambling 10 minutes before the episode recording, trying to find a pun to make.
I revel in your misery every week.
And that's why I want to very sincerely reach out to Jada Pinkett Smith and tell her that, listen, not worth it. Since we were talking about the 90s, I have a question for you, Vineet.
Okay.
In December 1990, a spacecraft found evidence of abundant gaseous oxygen, a widely distributed surface pigment with a sharp absorption edge in the red part of the visible spectrum, and atmospheric methane in extreme thermodynamic disequilibrium. These were very strongly suggestive indicators of potential life. Which spacecraft was this, and which part of the galaxy was it looking at?
Okay, what's the time frame on this?
This is a December 1990 observation.
December 1990?
Yeah.
Can you describe that whole disequilibrium part again?
The name of the spacecraft might be a bit of a tough question. So I'll help you out with that if you don't know the answer. But
let me give it a crack first. Let me give it a crack first.
You wanted me to describe that observation again, and I'll do so. It found evidence of abundant gaseous oxygen, a widely distributed surface pigment with a sharp absorption edge in the red part of the visible spectrum, and atmospheric methane in extreme thermodynamic disequilibrium.
Okay, is this one of Saturn's moons or Jupiter's moons?
No.
Okay, so this is 1990. What spacecraft did we have? The Hubble Space Telescope went up and had problems and was repaired in the mid-90s, I think 92, 93. So I don't think this is the Hubble Space Telescope, is this?
It isn't.
What spacecraft did we have out there at that time? Most of them, if I'm not mistaken, were sent to observe the moons of Jupiter, Saturn. We don't have any other interstellar probes out there except for Pioneer 10, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2. But I don't remember anything being described from their findings, because by that time they would have reached the far edges of the outer of the solar system. Am I anywhere close?
Not really.
Okay, so then that's not there. The Venera missions were to Venus. That was Russia, but that was in the 80s, right? That was not in the 90s.
And this is an American operation.
This is an American mission. Okay. Wow. This is a spacecraft I've not heard of. This is extremely cool. Okay, give me the clue. Give me the spacecraft name.
It is Galileo.
Wait, Galileo was to study Jupiter, right?
Yes.
But not the moons.
I'm not sure of the exact mission parameters for Galileo.
Okay.
I can look that up later. But Galileo is a spacecraft in question.
So Galileo was tasked for Jupiter and Jupiter's moons, if I remember correctly. So then the only thing I can think of when you're saying all of the other things is Mars. On its way to Galileo, on the way to Jupiter, it flew by Mars and said, hey, there's life on Mars.
That would be a great guess, but no, it isn't the case.
Oh, okay. This isn't Earth, right? This isn't going to be a like googly question where the spacecraft left and then it turned its camera back and like, hey, there's life on Earth.
Well, in this case, it is the answer. It is Earth.
Are you kidding me?
Carl Sagan suggested, convinced in fact, NASA to try this particular experiment almost as a proof of concept because they were searching for extraterrestrial life on other planets. So they wanted to see what happens if they did a similar search for a planet like Earth. And they realized that these parameters, at least, were fulfilled because, again, I repeat, abundant gaseous oxygen, a widely distributed surface pigment with a sharp absorption edge in the red part of the visible spectrum, and atmospheric methane in extreme thermodynamic disequilibrium. Moreover, the presence of narrow band pulsed amplitude modulated radio transmission seems uniquely attributable to intelligence. And this is a little experiment that Carl Sagan convinced NASA to conduct. And there is actually a scientific paper that was published talking about this very experiment that Galileo, the spacecraft, did.
Oh, that's a nice question. You really put a googly on me. Right? Nice. I appreciate it. Okay, I'm going to ask another question to you. This is something related to linguistics. Have you heard of the language of Babram?
No, I have not.
Yeah, no, obviously, it would be very surprising if you had, because it's an extinct Australian Aboriginal language of North Queensland. Any listeners who may know how this is actually pronounced, excuse me, I'm just going by what I think it's pronounced like, so I may very well be wrong. So, R.M.W. Dixon was a linguist who described his hunt for a native speaker of Mabram in his book called Searching for Aboriginal Languages, Memoirs of a Field Worker. Most of what we know about the language is from Dixon's field research. Mabram is famous in linguistic circles for an incident that happened when Dixon was researching the language.
Okay.
When Dixon asked a native what the Babram word for dog was, there was a classic back and forth, who's on first kind of back and forth, before they realized that there was no misunderstanding. So what is the Babram word for dog?
Sorry, what is the time frame for this?
Time frame is not particularly important, but let's say it is the 20th century.
Can you repeat the context in which this conversation happened?
So he was basically, he found a native speaker of the language and he was compiling his, he was studying the language. So when he asked the native what the Babram word for dog was, and there was a classic back and forth before they realized that there was no misunderstanding. And this made this particular language quite famous in linguistic circles.
Does it have to do anything with the dog's bark? Was it like something that sounded like a dog's bark?
No, this is very simple.
Is it Babram itself?
No. But you are getting closer. Like, the idea is quite close.
Would it be dog? That would be strange.
No, it is. That's the whole misunderstanding. Oh. The Babram word for dog is dog. So this is a million in one occurrence that can happen, because we are talking about the English, obviously, is a language which is part of the Indo-European group of languages, which was in Europe, right? And then you have the Australian Aborigines who've been completely isolated from the rest of the world for millions of years.
Wow.
And the Aboriginal people itself, they developed their own language completely independent of everybody else. So it is a million to one chance that you end up with the same word with the same meaning describing the same thing and almost pronounced exactly the same way. So the English word for dog comes from the Old English doga, and we get dog from that. And the Babram word for dog comes from the Proto Pama Nyungan language, which is in which it is Gudaga. Gudaga became dog.
Wow, okay.
So when he was researching this, it was the same kind of, you know, who's on first kind of thing. What's your word for dog? Dog. Dog? Dog. Wait. Dog? Dog.
that is quite hilarious, and that's quite cool. Okay. But interestingly enough, dog seems like such a huge coincidence, but there would be other words which are, I imagine, more straightforward, and I would imagine something like even father and mother, and its version of papa and mama, and pa and ma, or whatever these versions are, would make a lot more sense, perhaps because these are easiest sounds to pronounce for a baby. So it could make sense for that to be common across languages. But something like dog is such a funny coincidence, because dog is not something any infant needs to learn right off the bat.
Yeah, so that's another thing when I was reading this up. So many, if you look at languages which are in the, which had exposure to each other, like in, between you know, Asia and Europe, for example, even the Southeast Asian other languages, the there are certain consonants which are associated with certain words, like mom, ma, mum, right? The word ma or the consonant ma is quite associated with that. But if you look at the Aboriginal languages, right, it sometimes is BB, sometimes is Badhinan, sometimes is Ngamba, right? So it's, that's a completely different, that shows you how strange or at least how far away or in the language evolutionary tree these languages are, which makes it even more fascinating that suddenly just one word turned out to be exactly the same in modern English as it is in their language.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. And I imagine dogs were part of human society from a very early point. So
yeah, they branched off from wolves quite early.
Very interesting. Speaking of actually babies and first words, this is something I recently saw on, of all places, an Instagram reel. So this is not verified information. But you can try it out if you're an expecting parent or if you have just had a newborn child. If you are trying to get a child to say their first word and you are their father, perhaps, and you're competing with the mother and you want the child to say your name before they say, before the child says the mother's name, try going for papa more than dada or daddy, because the da sound is much tougher to make than the pa sound. So for a papa. And you might win that race if that's the objective. Yeah.
But I'm guessing that mama is easier.
Might be, but here the key to winning that race is just repetition. So just constantly keep saying papa in front of that baby all the freaking time. And eventually they're going to mimic you.
Devious.
So inspired by that devious little bonus fact, here's another little piece of trivia which has a very strange origin. Apple III computer was marred with a lot of technical difficulties. This was right after Apple II had come out, and Apple II was a massive success. But there were users, especially business users, who wanted more features which Apple II did not offer, and hence Apple III was released. Apple III, however, suffered because it had unreasonable demands from Steve Jobs, and demands like he did not want the design to look clunky or ugly, as Steve Jobs was known to be a massive design head. He wanted it to look very sleek and beautiful, so he did not want any vents on the computer. Instead, they tried to design a heat sink to absorb all the heat when the computer was running. So all of these issues were creating problems for the users of Apple III, including the employees of Apple itself. One of these engineers, Daniel Kottke, got so annoyed that he decided to do something which eventually Apple realized might help the other users who are also facing similar issues. What was it that became an official recommendation by Apple III customer support for any customer who called in with similar issues, that was discovered by Daniel Kottke when he was annoyed?
So this is still related with the temperature, the computer running hot.
Indirectly. I would not say directly related to it, but it was one of the issues that was causing problems.
And he found a solution. So, okay, I'm trying to just narrow it down. If it's a solution with temperature, then I have to start thinking of ways to do that.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, it was not a direct temperature-related issue.
Okay.
I'll explain later how, but it is indirectly related.
I have no clue what this is about. I can't remember exactly what the Apple III... The Apple III wasn't the one with the bright colors, right?
No.
Okay, so this is still the early 80s and the mid-80s then. Right, okay.
Yes. Apple III was released in 1980.
Yeah, so yeah, this is the boxy one. Oh, wait, is this a Was the Apple 3 the one where Apple released the mouse?
I'm not sure. I don't think so, but I can check.
Because I know that IBM engineers developed the mouse, but Apple, I think, licensed it from them and released it with their computers.
Xerox employees were the ones who came up with it.
No, sorry, Xerox, not IBM. Sorry, Xerox, yes. Okay. You'll have to give me some kind of clue on this. I am completely stumped.
So here's where I'll give you the connection to the heating issue. Because there wasn't proper heat dissipation because there were no fans or vents. The computer magazine Byte reported in 1982 that without proper heat dissipation, the Apple III's integrated circuits tended to wander out of their sockets.
Did they ask them to whack the computer on the top of the bar? It was like, just whack it, pat, 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 to put the chips back in place.
I'll give it to you. Because what Daniel Kottke did when he was very frustrated in one of these occasions, he picked up his Apple III and he slammed it down on the desk out of frustration. To his surprise, the computer jumped back to life. So, Apple support engineers for quite a while would recommend that any user facing problems with the Apple III should lift the computer 2 inches and drop it, as this would set the circuits back in place.
I'm just trying to imagine one of their customer care calls at the time. I'm having problems with the computer. Okay, have you tried turning it off and turning it on again? Yes. Have you tried picking it up and dropping it down again?
And then you'd be like, did I prank call myself? Like, who is this?
That's weird. That's nice. Okay. I see you. So, let's take a hard left into movies. Indian, kind of very indie specialist movies. Right. Filmmaker Utpal Borjapuri, his Assamese feature film Issue, is based on the Assamese writer Munikuntala Bhattacharya's novel with the same name. It won the National Film Award for Best Feature Film in Assamese. What's ironic is that even though Issue is quite obviously a work of fiction, it draws inspiration from very real incidents that happen in the remote parts of Assam and Meghalaya and displays it from the viewpoint of a child. Can you tell me what outlawed practice does it depict from a child's viewpoint?
The hunting of the one-horned rhinoceros.
No, you're thinking environmental. I would say cultural. Think cultural. Culture, superstition, that kind of thing. This question would be very at home in our previous episode.
Ooh. Okay, so I'm going to take a wild guess. Does it have anything to do with black magic? Or
closer. Closer. You're warm. Very warm.
Mm.
Outlawed practice. I don't think anywhere there's any statute in the Indian Penal Code which outlaws black magic.
Fair enough. What is that subset of black magic which has to do with in removing the evil spirit in a very violent way?
Exorcisms?
Exorcisms would be the English word for it. I'm trying to think of a Hindi or an Indian word.
This is Assamese, so this is not particularly related. I wouldn't focus on that, basically. Let's say it's got to do with the persecution of certain people.
Oh, interesting.
And it's indirectly related to your black magic guess.
Does it have to do with the persecution of witches, quote-unquote witches?
Yes, you're right. It is modern-day witch hunts. Okay. They still happen in Assam, Meghalaya, and parts of the Northeast, where people, women, are accused of being witches. And unsavory things happen to them after that. And this movie is based on a child's viewpoint of that kind of incidents happening. Modern-day witch hunts still do occur.
Very cool. So, let us move on to something which doesn't have anything to do with the previous question. So, I do not have a segue for you. But do you know what 1337 stands for?
Are you trying to get me arrested?
No. I don't know what illegal activity you are thinking of. But in my case, it has nothing to do with...
I was thinking of pirating. Pirating of videos and things like that. It used to be a torrent website by the name of 1337, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense then, because that would be a very good clue as to where I'm headed with this question.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't know of that, but yes, that's wonderful. That works out. What do you think it has to do with?
Oh, that's the entirety of the question. What do you know? Okay, what is 1337? Okay, I thought there was more
I thought there was more to follow up.
This is a huge awkward silence where I'm just waiting for the rest of the question.
You know what? Usually we would eliminate the silences, but in this scenario, I would be happy to leave that silence. Just
yeah.
Even our listeners are not sure whether their internet has stopped working or did they accidentally pause the podcast.
Okay. Wow, 1337. I've never actually wondered why the website was called 1337. To anyone, any law enforcement person listening, I have no connection with that website. I just know of it.
Purely academic. All of this is purely academic.
Yeah, purely academic interests. 133. I'm guessing, is it like one of those number codes for with numbers of letters in a phrase or something, like we had, when we were in school, kids used to write 143 for I love you and all those things.
You know what? You're not too far off. The numbers do refer to letters, yes.
Oh, okay.
Not in the exact same way as 143, which equates to I love you, but it does have a connection to letters.
So then maybe A, C, C, G? No, C is the third letter, A, C, C, G? No, okay. Mm-hmm. Nope. I need clue.
Okay. Have you, and these are various phrases from, I guess, this particular kind of language. So what 1337 refers to is a type of language or a type of a way of speaking. And I'll give you examples of this way of speaking. Do you know of P0RN?
P0RN. It's like pawn, right?
That would be a classic example. Because okay. P0RN. Pawn,
okay, so the zero stands in for O. Zero. Okay. Yeah. So then in that case, 1337 would be B37 or 1BB7 or IBB7.
So don't think of it as a direct correlation. Like, you won't get it directly from that. My point is more of like, this is an example of where. So if you know where P0RN is used, you'd be closer to figuring out what 1337 is in the context of.
We're talking about internet chat rooms, right? Most of the time, 1chan and 4chan.
Great.
And
those places. So that is what it is called. Yeah. It actually started in the 1980s when users of computer bulletin board systems would shorten words. The word YOU would become the letter U, or ARE, the word R, would become the letter R. So these were different parts of internet lingo. So you're right.
Okay.
1337 was that kind of a thing. Now I'm looking for the exact name, and that is where the crux of the question is. And here are the other examples, like pawn became P0RN, or own, like when you own somebody or you owned somebody in a game, became PWN, pawned them. Yeah. And that was because on the QWERTY keyboard, the O and the P are very close to each other. So a typo would end up resulting in a PWN instead of OWN. Yeah.
You'll have to either put me out of my misery or give me a clue that even a dummy would understand.
Okay. I'll give you the answer, but tell me what the connect is then. What is 1337 called? It was also referred to as Leet Speak.
Leet Speak. Why? I've heard of Leet Speak. Delete Speak. Or wait, what is something where you're deleting certain? No. What is it?
Not really. You're getting a bit colder. So Leet Speak is what 1337 referred to.
Okay.
Just
give me the answer. I don't think I'm going to get this.
Okay, fine. I'll help you out over here. Leet. The L would become the 7 upside down, the 3 would become an E upside down, and the 1 would become a T upside down.
Oh, God. Okay.
And Leet is similar to how a lot of these abbreviations and words were shortened. It came from elite. So elite, if you were an elite user, you would be using Leet Speak, which is why you would be using 1337. And 1337 became a way of referring to Leet Speak or Elite Speak in internet chat rooms.
Okay, I don't know if this inspired it or if this was inspired by science fiction, but if you read a lot of these science fiction novels set in the future, they always have this kind of language changes happening where everything is shortened and consonants and vowels are removed. And that kind of thing, I'm not sure. I can't like place exactly where, but I think in a few of William Gibson's novels and a few others as well, you have this kind of made-up terminology, which I've always thought felt like it was something from an internet chat room. So I would be very interested to know if this inspired the science fiction or science fiction inspired this.
That's a good question. I wouldn't be quite sure. I wouldn't make a guess either ways without reading a bit more about this. But yeah, ReadSpeak is considered very common. Perhaps users today, power users of the internet today, might not use it anymore simply because even on games like PUBG and other online games, you have the ability to send audio messages. And that's how people usually interact with their fellow users, fellow gamers. But back in the day when you didn't have the bandwidth to have audio messages, you would use ReadSpeak to be able to call somebody a noob. But instead of using the word noob, you would say N00B.
00B, yeah. Which is just unnecessary, I feel. Like, it takes the same amount of effort to type O as it does to type a zero. So what's the point?
Yeah, but it does help in other cases where, like, say, if you want to call somebody an ass, you would type A double S.
A double sign, dollar sign.
Yeah, you would do a @ symbol and a $$, and that would be ass. If you were to use the profanity, as somebody might call it, shit, you would the $ and then you would use the hash symbol, then you would the exclamation mark and the plus symbol.
This is too much work. Too much work.
Yeah. Well, if you really wanted to curse somebody back in the day, you had to put in the effort, Vineet, which meant that if you were cursed online on a on a page or a chat group back in the day, you must have really pissed somebody off because they had to put in a lot of effort.
Yeah, we just used all caps. I remember we just used all caps if you wanted to scream at somebody.
Yeah.
And no stars or hashtags either. We just used the words.
True. Back in the day, this was the case. But just to be clear, ReadSpeak is not to be confused with SMS speak, which was slightly later in origin. And that's where you started seeing things like instead of the word FOR, four, you would use the number 4. Or instead of the word 2TO, you would use the number 2. So SMS speak, while it sounds very similar to ReadSpeak, is slightly different. And this is where it comes from. It comes from the origins in chat rooms and back in the day online gaming.
Very nice. Very nice. I think that was the last question for today. But we still have, Aditya, your question for next week.
So my question for this week would be, based off of your question about the word for dog being the same in an Aboriginal language in Australia and in English, what word should ideally have been the same in, let's say, any Indian language? Name an Indian language, Vineet.
Okay, let's say Telugu.
Love that. Okay, Telugu is our a language of choice, and English. So if there was a word that should have been common between Telugu and English and unfortunately isn't, what word would that be? And the answer to that will be revealed in next week's episode, by when I will learn Telugu, apparently, because I do not speak any Telugu right now. I don't know why I am doing this to myself, but I am.
Okay. I actually mentioned Telugu because most people now, when they do see South Indian movies, it's usually a Telugu movie. So I said Telugu so that it might be easier for you to know. It might be difficult. Okay, fair enough. We await your answer for next week.
We shall all collectively find out next week.
Yes. So let me just round out today's episode with the answer to the audience question that I had asked at the beginning of the episode. Inspired from the Kannada blockbuster Ratha Saptami in 1986, which in turn was based on a Kannada novel of the same name, this movie went on to earn $800 million at the box office. It also for some time held the record for most awards won by a feature film. Which movie are we talking about?
Yeah, I don't know. No idea.
So I'll give you the plot of Ratha Saptami. Right, let's see if you can guess from that. There is an interval twist in Ratha Saptami where the hero supposedly dies in an accident. And the second half of the movie, where the heroine is sent out of her hometown to her uncle's place in order to overcome her depression, but is shell-shocked to find a lookalike in a vehicle nearby, and later catches a glimpse of him again in a discotheque.
Is this Kahona Pyar?
Yes, it is Kahona Pyar.
Very interesting. You know what my favorite part of Kahona Pyar is? The fact that She's in New Zealand, I believe, when she goes.
Yeah.
In the second half of the film.
Yeah.
Amisha Patel. And for some reason, there is a club called Club Indiana over there, which has never made any sense to me. Like, were they trying to make it sound like it is Club India, but like...
There are a lot of places in New Zealand which are named after British Indian officials. So, who knows?
Yeah, maybe. But given that almost everybody in Club Indiana was Indian, I don't know if it was just... Indians decided... That, hey, listen, this name of this place has India in it, so let's all go clubbing over there. I don't know why I'm trying to find logic in a 2000s film. All-out blockbuster Bollywood film. But I was always very amused by the fact that there was a Club Indiana which was filled with Indians in New Zealand. Like, none of these things geographically make any sense. But it was the case.
It was the case. And for people who watch South Indian movies or who recently watched some few blockbuster movies, if you remember the movie Jailer, where there was an incredible cameo by two other South Indian artists. One was Mohanlal and the other one was Shivraj Kumar. Shivraj Kumar is the hero of Ratha Saptami. So it's one of his earlier movies. So it's, if you're interested, see if you can find the streaming version. I could not find one, but if you could, possibly it's great. You might be able to see Shivraj Kumar in his prime.
Very cool. Is that also a recommendation for the week?
No, not my recommendation for the week. My recommendation for the week is actually a podcast called Noble Blood.
Okay.
So they do a wide variety of episodes, but mainly on which I found they focus on stories about, noble people and people of royal descent or, something that has captured the public imagination that particular period of history. And it almost always revolves around a death or a pretender to the throne or something. It's got a wide variety of episodes. It covers a lot of different things. But Noble Blood, I really enjoyed the podcast. They have a long catalog of episodes. So it's if you are interested in binging it, you have enough for weeks and weeks at an end.
Very cool. Okay, yeah. So my recommendation for the week is Super Deluxe. And I was reminded because there's a question about aliens and whatnot. And a great iconic film, Night of the Living Dead. And somehow I found Super Deluxe to be very iconic. And it is on Netflix, I believe. So if you haven't checked out Super Deluxe, especially those movie viewers from North India who don't watch a lot of South Indian cinema, I would seriously recommend trying it out. It's a great, great film. I love Super Deluxe. Yeah.
That's what I keep telling everybody. Don't fear the subtitle. Oh, embrace the subtitle.
Indeed, it is.
It opens up a huge arena of movies and other content that you normally wouldn't be exposed to. A friend of mine is actually, he conducts plays, he writes plays. And in Bangalore, Sudhir, he made this mystery play set 100 years ago in the past. And they had subtitles for the play, which I found was fascinating because apparently the vast majority of the audience who turned up were people who were non-Malayalis. Which I think is great because that's the way you can spread around stories and, just be open to the subtitle.
Actually, you know what? I find that to be a very great point to also recommend something which is kind of personal, personally related to me. A friend of mine from Singapore who lives in Mumbai now is a theater director and writer. And he is staging one of his plays from Mumbai back in Singapore. And it's called Fistful of Rupees. And the interesting part is, like, it has very minimal dialogue in Hindi, but the context of it is beautiful enough that I think it crosses boundaries and languages very easily. I have also had the experience personally of performing in plays in Singapore, which were in Hindi. And we did use subtitles, but instead of subtitles, they were called surtitles because they were on the top. Because they used to be projected onto a black screen, but right at the top, so it didn't interfere with the acting that was happening, but the surtitles would appear right at the top of that black projection. And that made for a fun viewing experience for people who wanted to watch it but did not speak any Hindi. So I have been part of those plays, and yes, you're right. Do not fear that few inches of text on your screen. It is indeed going to open a whole new world to you.
And with that, we end the episode for today. That's all for our episode for this today. Thank you for listening in. We hope you enjoyed the show, that you learned something new. If you liked what you heard, please consider subscribing to our podcast and leaving us a review on your favorite podcast platform, wherever you're listening to us. Please take 2 seconds after you finish this, after I stop speaking, to just go out, rate our podcast a 5-star and hit the subscribe button so that you are informed when new episodes pop up. This also helps us reach a wider audience and allows more people to discover and enjoy the show. We'd also love to hear from you, feedback, suggestions, trivia. If you're interested in having your questions feature on the episode, all you've got to do is to send us an email at ruquizzingme@gmail.com. In the subject title, please mention which of the hosts you want to ask the question. So if you want me to ask the question, put Vineet in the subject line. And if you want Aditya to ask the question, you can just put Aditya in the subject line. And Scouts Honor, we don't see any mails which are tagged with each other's names, right? So the question will still be quite blank for us. We will be completely unaware of what the other person is going to ask. So please feel free to share your questions with us as well. You can also reach us on Instagram. Follow us at RUQuizzingMe. We appreciate your support and look forward to sharing more episodes with you in the future. Aditya will be back after the musical sting for the fact check. And that's all from me. Have a great day.
See you guys next week.